Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, your host. His name is in the title of it. This is the TV Talk Machine starring Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I am ecstatic. I've had so much good time lately with TV.
Ecstatic.
I'm ecstatic. I have so much to tell you. But one thing I'm super excited about, you know, it's this show. No one's going to even be able to see it yet, but I must burst at the seams and tell you a little bit about it.
Okay, what's the show?
Agent X.
Where is it airing?
It's going to be on TNT.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not coming until November 8th. But, oh.
They know drama.
Well,
we'll talk about it some more next week then. So explain me what Agent X is about.
Okay, because I'm just bursting.
Yeah, let's do it.
I had to tweet things to you. It's just the gift. I wrote my review today, and it's really super long, and I left out so much stuff. But I'm just going to be able to tell you this part. Okay, so it stars Sharon Stone.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And like it's her return to television. Why she didn't do HBO or Showtime, I have no idea. This material is not any good. But of course, she's an executive producer because she would have to be. She always wants to get the credit. But this is one of those things where there's a lot of producers involved, and it's, you know, they kind of mucked it up. But here's the idea, Jason, and I want to see if this would intrigue you, because there's a whole other part that you're going to love about tech. But let me just tell you about the idea. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's the idea. Sharon Stone is the first female vice president.
Okay.
Uh-huh. If you don't count Veep, of course. That's
sure.
You know, in shows, she's a little bit late. And so she's going to go to the vice presidential residence where an Alfred-like character from Batman, played by Gerald McRaney, is her butler of sorts. And so she gets there, and he has got to break to her something pretty big. And he leaves her with a key that has sort of like National Treasure-ish tones all over it, Freemasonry gibberish. And of course, she sees a little keyhole in the fireplace and turns it, and a door opens up, and underneath there's a big Freemason built lair from hundreds of years ago. And so he guides her down there, and he's going to tell her, he says, this is what he says to her. What's down there? And he says, the greatest secret in the history of our country. Are you excited?
Sorry, I wasn't yawning.
Are you feeling the excitement?
Yeah. It sounds, okay. What could it be? It's a great secret.
It's the greatest secret in the history of our country.
Okay.
So they go down into this little lair, which turns out to be like a fully formed like bat cave with all this technology and blah, blah. And they find the Constitution. And she goes, oh, what a lovely copy of the Constitution. He goes, no, this is the real Constitution. The one that no one else really gets to see except for the vice president because, you know, whatever. Anyway, there's an Article 2, Section 5. And she says, no, I must correct you. I know the Constitution. There's only four articles under Section 2. And he says, no. The fifth one is that no one in the country has ever seen it except other vice presidents and the current sitting president and the Supreme Court Justice of the United States. So, dun, dun, dun.
So there's a secret clause in the Constitution
that no one has seen but is being upheld
secretly
by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, which is just, I love it. So it's amazing. Okay, so this is what they find. They read her, they want her to read it, and they said, this is your thing. This is what we have here. And she says, oh my God, what could it be? And then she starts to read it, Article 2, and here's what it says. She reads it out loud. An agent of unknown identity is hereby authorized to serve at the discretion of the vice president for the purpose of aiding the republic in times of dire peril. Yeah, that's one way to put it. So basically,
seems strangely specific.
The vice president basically gets their own James Bond.
Yeah, she has
kill people.
Constitutionally mandated
agent for hire.
Agent.
Oh my God! So that's really what it is, and it's just crazy from that point on. But it's a hokey, funny show. I laughed my ass off. It's not supposed to be funny. It is hysterically funny. When my review comes out, people will know I hurt my back, threw it out, tweaked it, very painful, kind of started getting better after 5 days, watched this show, and laughed so hard I hurt it again. That is a true story.
Wow.
And but the reason I was giddy to have you involved is that this makes CSI Cyber look like Mr. Robot.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause it is – they are not even attempting to like explain their tech stuff. It is pants wetting. Let me give you a quick example. So Gerald McRaney, he's not only is he the butler slash guardian of the residence and whatever, he apparently is a stone cold tech wizard. And so he's got like a little pad. And so when the agent who has a little camera button, so that they can sit in a lair, and while he's out doing James Bond stuff, they can see it perfectly, of course, like there was a camera there. And so he'd say, "How do I get out?" And Gerald Lowe's like, "I'm opening the door. I'm doing this." He's like touching things. So all he really has to do on his touchscreen, Jason, is to touch something, and he can pretty much disable it, even if it is a highly impenetrable like Soviet embassy. And I wanted to tell you, I wanted to give you verbatim and our listeners, because mm-hmm. this is so good. They get into this Soviet embassy, and the agent is trying to track down the missing daughter of the head of the FBI, and of course he's just like he's caught. It's just insane, and he's caught up and he can't get out. And so he flashes back to Gerald McRaney slash Alfred, as I call him. Mm-hmm. And Alfred pulls out his hand. He's remote, by the way. This is all Wi-Fi. He pulls out this handy, basically iPad, taps on it. You know, he can tap on little screens, and he says verbatim, "We just downloaded a backdoor to their security system. We own it now. Turning off all recording, erasing their hard drive. You never existed, John."
Wow.
So good.
All you have to do is download a backdoor.
Just download the backdoor. No problem.
That's in the dark web.
Yeah. And the dark web is mentioned.
Oh, good.
My favorite part, though, is there's a little infighting, and this is where you come into. There's a little infighting between this FBI and the CIA. And the CIA was trying to – they think they know about this secret agent. But no one heard of, like, maybe five people. And this guy's like, "He's sure of it. I'm going to get these guys. I'm going to out them." So they think they found a picture of him, this FBI guy. And they need to take it to the CIA. The CIA says, "No, we're not going to let you use our enhanced persona," which is called the software, "to find out this image." And then they agree that they'll do it. So the identity's in the balance. And so they ask Gerald McRaney slash Alfred, "How can we fix this?" Sharon Stone says that. "How can we stop his identity from being revealed and his cover burnt?" He says, I kid you not, "We can load up some malware on the CIA's computer."
Wow.
And okay. So he downloads some malware onto a thumb drive. I'm not kidding you. He walks into the CIA posing as he's just a tourist, but then he steals a badge, puts it on, walks over to the IT department, which basically is one guy. I love this, and all of the CIA. Mm-hmm. And he's got like a corner, a little cubicle, tiny little cubicle, one computer. And the guy says, "What are you doing here? Who are you?" And Gerald McRaney says, "I'm your mysterious boss.
Candygram."
Yeah, Candygram. Knock, knock.
Huh.
He's like, "We have reason to believe that someone's using your password identity to get into a hack into the government mainframe." And the guy's like, "That can't be. What should I do?" And this is verbatim. Gerald McRaney pulls out the malware and says, verbatim, "Plug this in."
I just want you to hear what's happening in the background here. This is me setting Agent X to record.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so the guy says, "What is it?" And Gerald McRaney says, quote, "It will help us track down whoever has been using your password.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what happens next?
Did they download a backdoor?
The CIA IT guy takes the thumb drive and plugs it in.
Sure.
All this crazy stuff happens, and then they escape.
That's called social engineering.
Oh, my God.
That's Gerald McRaney. He's some sort of wizard.
He's such a wizard. Mm-hmm. It is such not a thing that they're not even trying. Not even trying. Like, all he has to do is have a picture of someone else's monitors. He needs a video feed showing him their video feed monitors. Then he touches their feed with his fingers, and they all go out.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Oh my gosh.
It sounds amazing. Computers, they're fun. How do they work?
Man,
I don't know. I'm gonna share with you something that I saw this week.
Okay.
This is an unusual format for us to do it this way, but this is kind of fun. This is why we love TV.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was in last week's episode. It was last week's episode of The Flash.
Okay.
Show I like, show you like.
Mm-hmm.
Fun. Not necessarily the most scientifically accurate. The laws of physics kind of contravened on a regular basis on The Flash. That's the whole premise of the show. But there was a moment that will go down in, I think, television history for its dumbness last week on The Flash, which is they're breaking into a Captain Cold, played by, what's the guy from Prison Break?
Yes.
Dominic
Purcell.
Purcell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that it?
I think so.
Yeah, that's it. Dominic Purcell. He's Captain Cold. He's going to be on the spinoff, but he's guesting on The Flash right now. They're breaking in somewhere for a heist, and they're, you know, it's that standard heist setup where you've got like a valuable thing and it's surrounded by lasers, right? And you're like, like Tom Cruise coming through the ceiling of Mission Impossible. It's like the lasers. You got to avoid the lasers, right? And you're thinking The Flash, The Flash could maybe go through the lasers, or he could jump over the lasers, use his super speed. The lasers wouldn't know. This is what happens. Captain Cold gets out his cold gun and makes the lasers freeze. The lasers turn freeze into like ice beams. And I'm thinking, okay, lasers are light. I don't think you can freeze light. I'm not sure this is how this works. What's going to happen now? Are they going to like step around? No, he just walks through them and like busts them. And it's like, this is why did they
like ice thick crystals?
Why have other robbers not thought of this? You freeze the lasers and then you break them, and then they're not there anymore because you broke the lasers. And there's like laser dust down on the floor or something. But it's all good. You can steal it. And it was the most. I hope on one level I'm like, hey, it's okay. The science doesn't work like that. Who cares? You got a show about a really fast guy. And another part of me thought somebody should have probably said something. Like, this is not even close. This is not, we're untethered from reality entirely now. We're freezing lasers.
I think there's got to be a guy who says, or a woman say, people, we're not even on the right planet now.
We're not going to freeze some lasers. Yeah. It's not a thing.
We're not even,
they don't have a not a thing person. No. At The Flash, it's always a thing.
I would have. That's amazing. I love that scene. I would have been equally happy if Dominic Purcell had said, "I have a little chip. Plug this in."
Oh yeah, sure. Why not? It's the anti-laser chip. It's a laser powered chip. You don't even need to plug it in. You just stick it in the laser beam, and it goes, and it does something magical. It is magical sometimes.
I just, of all the problems on my show that I love on my end, Agent X, it's coming out on November 8th, the idea that, I mean, there's so much to it, so much great stuff. I love that there's one IT guy and he's in a cubicle with everybody else. He doesn't even have his own office or anywhere else.
For the
CIA, because they can't clearly afford more than one desktop.
It's not really a technology.
It's
not a technology oriented organization, really. It's not their thing.
Right. And he knows that he's just been accused by a stranger of all these things. And the stranger just said, who he doesn't even know, plug this in. I died laughing. Yeah. I just like pissed my pants.
Your security procedures here are unacceptable, sir. Here, plug this in.
I just thought, you have given up as a writer if you're just, you create a scene like that in the first place, and then it ends with plug this in. So great.
So Agent X. So would you say, now I looked online and found one advanced review of this so far. And
oh, really? Because it's embargoed, I think. But okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I don't know. Maybe they don't care.
I guess they won't care. I mean, honestly, here's the crazy part about it. I mean, I'll let you finish in a sec. But yep. Here's a crazy thing. It stars Sharon Stone, and until like 2 days ago, I'd never even heard it. Everybody's like, "What Agent? What Agent X? What?"
Yeah, I thought it was like an X-Men spinoff or something.
Yeah. So what did the advanced review say?
The advanced review is that, I'm not going to go into it too much. I will just say ludicrous is a word that is used and contrived is a word that is used. And we'll just leave it at that.
Oh, my God. Contrived is generous.
It's actually God. The phrase was ludicrously contrived. So not just contrived. The contrived nature is completely ludicrous. So what I want to say is this like so bad it's funny kind of viewing?
Yes.
All right.
This is one of the very, very, this is an elite program. This is one of those very, very rare programs that is so bad that I think people absolutely have to watch it. And I watch it. I'm creating a drinking game.
Okay.
Because it's got so many drinking. I am not, this is not an exaggeration. I was laughing so hard that I was hitting my hand on my desk, like pounding the desk because I couldn't, it's just, they have every problem. They've got continuity errors. They've got the world's worst accents. Like there's a woman who's a Soviet agent and her accent is coming in and out like every third word. Her name's Olga. And she's like, Olga. And then it's like, she's from California, first three or four words. And then she's back out of central casting. And then she just forgets the accent. Oh, my Lord. I love it.
Wow. All right. I got it recorded on the TiVo. You heard it. It was in here. All right. We'll talk about it some more. Agent X. Amazing. What else? We got some other things going on. I saw that you posted your review of Wicked City, which I think we touched on briefly a week or two ago. I had bad feelings about it because I saw the ads for it, and the ads seemed really like misogynistic and kind of regressive old, hey, violence against women is fun in TV. Let's do some mm-hmm. more of that. And then I read your review and I was like, yep, it sounds like that was an accurate depiction of this show.
Yeah, completely accurate. It is so much violence against women, and the serial killers set in the 80s in Los Angeles. There is trite writing, not very good acting. A lot of people wasted in it, Jeremy Sisto among them. But it's just like it's trying to be overly creepy. Ed Westwick plays this serial killer. And when he looks like a serial killer anyway, so he's perfectly cast. But the thing that it's so much fun, it's so shameful for ABC to do this in 2015, and especially for a network that programs primarily to women.
Mm-hmm.
So within the first 5 minutes, as I said in my review, there is there's a blowjob scene and the guy's basically stabbing her in the head repeatedly, and then her headless body turns up at a corpse cemetery, and it's constantly there's lots of stabbing.
It's the family friendly network, so
oh my God, it's unbelievable that it got made.
Yeah. Well, sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. It was such a joy.
Wow. Let's see. We should touch on Master of None just briefly, but it's on in a week from now, so we can talk about it again next week, I suppose. But this is Aziz Ansari. And is this the Mike Schur was involved with this? Is that right, from Parks and Rec?
I don't know if it was Mike. I don't think it was Mike Schur. It was somebody from Parks and Rec. What's his name? Wattels, who died.
Harris.
Yeah. So, because this was in production from a long time ago, because they had got all 10 episodes are done now before they launch on the 6th. It is a great series. I recommend that everybody. We jumped out really early. We actually published my review. Like at 6:30 the night that the embargo broke, and
this is Netflix.
It's Netflix. All 10 episodes will be available on November 6th, I believe. It is It's really great. I would just say the first episode is not my favorite part of it, but Aziz Ansari really starts to demonstrate why they put faith in him. And I compared it sort of to like a junior level. It's not quite there yet because it's the first season. Like a junior level Louis, where Louis C.K. was given all this freedom to make a show, and he just turned in something that we had never seen before. This isn't quite there yet, but it's different. It's multicultural. It's funny. Aziz Ansari also, this is the way that him to break out. So he's not just a character on Parks and Recreation or the character you see on his stand-up shows. He adds more layers of depth, and it's funny. It's self-deprecating, and it's shockingly, it becomes kind of really endearing and sweet at the same time. And I think he's trying a lot of different things in this, and I really liked it. And every episode got better. I watched 5 of the 10, and every episode got better.
And it is executive producer Mike Schur and Alan Yang, who are both executive producers on Parks and Rec, and two of the three guys who wrote Fire Joe Morgan, my favorite sports blog of all time, way back in the day. So yeah, so he put, like, Aziz Ansari put some people he was comfortable with around him to do this, which is
he did,
is cool.
and we can go into it more next week when we get closer. It's just that people should put it on their radar, and it's
right.
Clearly a show that they will have to add.
All right, cool. Definitely. Boy, there's so much Times of Confusion. So much good TV out there.
So much.
And so much bad TV that you have to watch, too. So you want to talk a little bit, I mean, without getting into the spoilers of it, there was definitely another character death on The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And I saw that at HollywoodReporter.com that you did a little, it's almost like a written podcast, if you will, where you and Dan Feinberg talked about killing characters and what are the rules of killing characters, which I thought was really interesting. And like, is it real or is it a fake out? And, you know, I don't know if you've got more to talk about. I'll put the link in the show notes to it, but it's an interesting conversation to have about what are the rules of killing characters and when are you mistreating your audience and when are you treating them right?
Yeah. And I think without naming the person, I think that this person has to be dead. In my book, I honestly, when I watched it, I never for a second thought he wasn't dead. The fact that later on Twitter, there was a thing, there was all the stuff about he's not dead and blah, blah, blah. And here's how he could not be dead and blah, blah, blah. I was just like, you know what? No, he is dead because it's the way they shot it from multiple angles and overhead, especially. There's literally not a way he can survive. So my take was, okay, if this is a fake out, if this conspiracy that people are perpetuating on Twitter, other critics, et cetera, then this show is done as far as being something that I think The Walking Dead is still a really good show, and it needs to be considered amongst our top tier shows because of it's beyond just a zombie show. But if this goes through, the bottom drops out and you can't take the show seriously because now no one can die and you'll never know if they die. And anything that you earn dramatically of a killing, everybody's going to say, well, that's who knows. Maybe he'll come back next week or she'll come back next week. That's how you ruin a show. And when you manipulate the audience and everybody by doing these stunts, you've entered a cheap zone. I don't think he's there. I don't think the Scott Gimple, the executive producer and showrunner, is there. I think this character is dead, and I think he may be flashbacks, and there might be some other things that you can use him as. But he's dead, I think. But here's the weird part, and that's where I stay, and that's where we kind of stayed. But here's the weird part about that show: if this person comes back, I'll actually still watch the show because I love the show. I find it highly entertaining, but I will no longer critically respect it. And there's a lot of shows I watch and I just think, you know, whatever. That's not, I watch Blacklist.
Right.
And clearly I'm going to watch Agent X and laugh every week. So I'll watch The Walking Dead because to be spooked and to be compelled, but it will pull itself out of consideration for any kind of critical acclaim if this death doesn't stick.
Yeah, it's, I mean, again, you've got as a show, you've got kind of got your bond with your viewers, and at some point you risk having no tension or or at least when you want to kill somebody, because The Walking Dead does kill people, yeah. then it feels arbitrary and like there are no rules, because they'll kill them if they want, and if they want to kill them and bring them back, they'll do that. And as a viewer, nothing you're seeing can actually inform whether the outcome will be one way or another, because right. you don't even know anymore whether what you're seeing is a cheat or not. Which, I mean, this actually reminds me of you talking about The Affair, too. It's that there's like this underlying kind of contract that viewers in a show have, and shows, when they undermine it, they do it really at their own risk, because as a viewer, you might still watch it, but it's hard to feel that connection and take it seriously if you can't trust that what you're seeing is, you know, if it's a show that messes with you like Mr. Robot, it's one thing. But if it's a show where you're like, okay, I think I know what the ground rules here are, and then it's like, but except when we don't want them to be that can be really frustrating as a viewer.
Yeah, and that's astute, because I was going to say, yeah, it's the same standard I would hold to The Affair, where you're manipulating the audience, and it's a cheat that it's not. It's easy to do. You're taking dramatic shortcuts doing that, and you've lost all faith at that point.
It's kind of against the ground rules, and it's not playing fair in a way.
Exactly.
And I think, sometimes it's fun to play with an audience, but I feel like audiences deserve a lot of respect, and I think audiences know when, or at least a lot people in the audience will know when they're not being respected. And I think that even if they can't verbalize it, that's one of the reasons why people have that opt-out moment with shows, is that the shows no longer respect them. They no longer take them seriously. They're playing, you know, they're doing gimmicks and stunts and things that don't actually logically follow. And I think that's one reason why people turn off on shows sometimes is that even if they can't say it that way, I think maybe that's what it is. It's like, yeah, you know, it doesn't work for me. It's like, maybe it's no longer doing what it said it would do, and it's not providing you with what you thought you were getting. I don't know.
Right. Exactly.
When shows go bad.
Right.
Now, if they start bad, like H&X, then, you know, what can you do? But
yeah, because then that would be why I'm watching it. Now, if it all of a sudden got good, I'm like, what the hell? I don't have time for this.
Yeah. You broke the contract with me, H&X. You made me feel something. Nobody's supposed to do that.
Plug this in.
Hey, there's a couple other premieres we should at least mention, and yeah. We've talked about them before. So The Returned is coming back, right?
Yes. Tomorrow.
Back from the dead. Well, it's Halloween. Why not?
Yes. Halloween, both The Returned and Ash versus the Evil Dead
right.
are on the 31st.
Right. Fitting. And that's the premiere for Ash versus Evil Dead. We haven't seen that other than like trailers and stuff. Right.
Right. So yeah. Just trailers. And The Returned is that's the one I'm really looking forward to. So it's very excited. I actually have not seen that one on my own. So
spooky Halloween shows. Woo!
I know. Exciting. It's
sure.
really exciting.
And I have a brief report about Supergirl. I don't know if you...
Oh, yes. I watched it. So
did
I
you watch
hear
it?
Your thoughts, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I liked it. It's a pilot. I think that the people who wanted to criticize it over the summer from their trailer were... you know, they again, I think people were judging it as the whole show. And it's like, guys, these are excerpts from a pilot. And they're setting up the premise of the show.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's got potential. I think it could very easily end up being quite good. And I think that I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt because of the producers involved, because these are the Flash and Arrow producers. They're involved with it. And so I think they get what a superhero show is going to be like. I do see how it could also very easily be terrible going forward, because it's a pilot. Who can judge? There are things in it that if they said, this is what we want to emphasize from the pilot, that it would maybe be a misstep and not as good. But, you know, in general, I kind of liked it, and I liked that it addressed a lot of the issues head on. I read there was a really nice essay. I can't remember where it was, maybe on io9.com. There was a nice essay about sort of the feminism of Supergirl and the idea that they address head-on issues like the dialogue she's got with Calista Flockhart where she complains, as you might expect, being called Supergirl and not Superwoman. And Calista Flockhart basically has this whole, like, I can be a girl if I want. I'm a girl, and I've got this, and I've got that, and all that. And why, you know, what's your problem with that? And I thought, like, all right, that's kind of cool that they're addressing it and they're talking about this stuff, and that, you know, this is about a character who is who's basically has known all along. It's a nice twist on the superhero origin thing. She's known all along that she was from an alien planet and that she has powers, and she's just she wasn't needed because she got time warp, whatever. Superman was already there and she was supposed to be his guardian. So she sort of lived this normal life and tried to fit in. And that's kind of interesting where she's finally like, you know what? I'm not going to fit in. I'm going to use my powers. I'm going to be a superhero. I think that's really an interesting spin on it. So I'm encouraged. I think it could end up being a good show, but it's a pilot and there's just as much chance that it could end up being kind of cheesy and bad. So I think I'm definitely on board for now, and optimistic that it can be an interesting show with some twists that that Flash and Arrow kind of can't provide because just because of the scenarios, the way that they set them up, and the fact that they've got women in the supporting roles but not the lead roles, and Supergirl they can do it the other direction. There are a lot of women characters in it. I think it is kind of ludicrous that her sister is a secret agent, and that kind of comes out of the blue. And I kind of rolled my eyes at the whole idea, like, we need to have this premise that there are Kryptonian prisoners who are on the loose and they've been in hiding for years, but now they're mad because she has shown up or something. It seems very much like we're selling the network on the fact that we've got 20 stories to tell here, and not like it seemed kind of really kind of structured and artificial. Like, here's your premise is we've got 25 criminals tracked down, and I'm not sure that was really necessary, but you know, I'm optimistic about it.
Yeah, I would second all of that, everything you just said. I think that the ratings were great. I want to see second episode whether the CBS contingent who took a peek at it, whether they come back, and if they don't come back, how much of the remaining audience, I'm very curious to see that number, who are incoming to CBS, who are not CBS regulars. That divide, like the moving in and out of the ocean, basically, that's the tides there. I want to see what that does to the ratings, because they were really good ratings. Hmm. And beyond that, I thought, you know what? It's a pilot. It's a little bit slight for me. And I want the next episode to be a lot better. And I think it probably will be.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, second episode often will tell the tale. I think the pilot, I think they're trying to do a lot in that pilot, right? And that's a tough thing. And they're trying to set up all the characters. And I mean, there are moments like her friend who thinks that she's gay, and then later wants to, I mean, he is such a that's just a bad character, and maybe again they can refine him, but he's like a stock buddy character. And the fact that you would say, hey, I'm going to show you that I've got a new thing by jumping off the top of this building, it's like, nobody would do that. That's crazy. Yeah. Look, hey, friend, it's going to look like I committed suicide and I'm a crazy person. Oh, just kidding. I'm actually super. That's a little bit much. But, but yeah, I think there's a lot of potential there. And yeah, we'll see. I think the CBS thing is going to be fascinating because they got that big initial audience because CBS has all of these eyeballs. And the question is, you know, are they going to buy into a show? I feel like doing it as the shadow of Superman, right? Like we see him in silhouette at one point and they talk about him, but they kind of don't want to talk about him too much, but they still talk about him even when they're not talking about him. And it seems weird on one level. On another level, though, I think it's kind of brilliant because if there's anything, any superhero that your CBS audience is going to have ever even heard of, it's going to be Superman. Superman's like the superhero, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so having him be a presence around that, I feel like that maybe almost makes the whole thing go down easy to be like, we're putting her in the context of Superman, and you understand Superman, right? So now you'll understand why this is not quite Superman, right? I mean, in a way that maybe like the Flash or Arrow, it's sort of like, hey, there are other superheroes too. Here it's not even that. It's like, you know Superman, and this is his cousin. And so she's a girl and she lives in a different city, but she's basically Superman, right? Okay, and now we have a show. And that shorthand might actually benefit them, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting the next week or two, I think.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how it works creatively and how the ratings hold up. But anyway, I think it's really interesting. Yeah, so we'll see. That's all that's on my agenda. I got a lot of listener stuff here. If you want to do some letters,
let's do the listener stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. This is the Agent X episode, but here we go. All right. So listener Dean on Twitter, we'll start out with a tweet. And this is about Supergirl. So his comment is just, with superpowers, can't Kara get a better job than the cut-rate Devil Wore Prada assistant, like a world champion arm wrestler or something? And to which I will say, I assume that in the future episode, she's going to be dealing with this. I mean, this is laid out by the pilot, is, you know, her struggle to be a regular person, and which is now her secret, you know, now it's her secret identity. It was her identity, and now it's her secret identity, and how she interacts with her job and with her coworkers. I think that'll be really interesting, because, yeah, she could totally quit her job and just try to make money as an arm wrestler or something like that, but she probably doesn't want to, and that's a good superhero trope. I think that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I support that too. I and that explains a lot of the silly footage that people thought, like, oh, this is like sexist and she's just a bumbling girl and, oh, I don't have any superpowers. But and I, you know, shy in front of other guys, but once they establish that she's doing this on a purpose, she's trying to fit in and blend in and not stick out in any way, so she becomes kind of a wallflower until she busts out in the show where she has to finally do it. That was a good setup.
All right, I got let's see, another tweet. This is from Baby What What.
Oh, nice.
Baby What What. That's all I know.
Uh-huh.
You bought out on Daredevil, but tell us you're going to give Jessica Jones a shot. The trailer looks amaze. It's Twitter. You can't say amazing when you could say amaze.
Or amaze balls.
Yeah. That's even longer, though. So what do you think, Jessica Jones? I watched the trailer the other day.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch for sure.
All right.
I think in fairness, which is really good for when we have this now set up, where Dan Feinberg's on board with us at THR, it's good because, you know, I think that, you know, I'm not, you know, my predilection is not to like those kind of shows. Mm-hmm. So someone who is, I mean, maybe it's biased in the other direction, but I want Dan to review it. I'll look at it and I'll comment on it. That's in fact our rule, like. If you're not reviewing it, you can always check in back in later and do a whole critical take on it as well. But yeah, Jessica Jones, I'm kind of excited. I want to see that one.
Actually, I read that comic just a couple months ago because I knew it was based on this very particular comic called Alias, which is the name of her detective agency. And it's a kind of a fun premise, a retired superhero. And she's got powers and stuff, but she doesn't want to be a superhero anymore. She just wants to be a detective. Yeah, it looks interesting. So I'm definitely going to check it out, too. And I should mention that it looks like we're going to do a podcast. One of our little TV podcasts on The Incomparable will be we've got a group forming to do Jessica Jones coverage. So if you watch it and like it, there'll be a whole podcast about it. We'll see. We did that with Daredevil, too. So John Quinn from Jolly Old England.
Nice.
With two questions. First, how do you watch television? And I would say you turn on the television and sit down in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what he means by that. And second, which program would cause the most moral outrage if it were broadcast in the olden days? I would pick Banshee.
That's pretty good. okay, let's go. I'll go reverse. So I think anything that's coming up that's on a premium channel that has all this nudity and stuff, that would really not go over with people. And I think, you know, we're such a, you know, moralistic country that you can't have, I've said this many times, but we would rather see somebody get shot in the eye than see their nipple.
Right.
Even for a second.
I'd say also anything by Ryan Murphy.
Yes. I think pretty much, yes. Actually, you know what? I'm right there. That ends the conversation. American Horror Story is the one that would, olden times, people would, you know, go to Hollywood with pitchforks. As far as how to watch television, how I do it, well, my job's been changing quite a lot. In the past, it was all screeners. One of my little caveats is that I review a lot of stuff not sitting down so that I don't, you know, sit in front of the TV and get fat all day. Mm-hmm. But now a lot of it is links, which is kind of a disaster because not all these sites are the same. Even the Netflix site is not very good. I mean, they know how to stream on their paid site, but when on their press site, it's glitchy. And so I do that. It used to be I did every scripted show, whether it was drama, comedy, whatever. I didn't do any of the unscripted reality shows. So I didn't have time. There was too many of them. Well, now in the age of too much TV, there's just too much for one person, and it would be no fun to have that job. So, you know, Dan is on board, and we're splitting up a lot of the stuff. It doesn't actually cut down on the hours spent watching TV, I should say, because when Dan he's reviewing Ash and the Evil Dead and The Return this weekend. But I'm going to watch those as well. He's watching the shows I reviewed because we all want to be up on it.
Right.
So the hour or so that it would take you to write the review, depending how hard it is, you save that time, but you don't really save a whole lot of time in actually, you know, hours watched. So I try to fit as many hours as I can in. It's a flexible schedule. That's how I watch TV. I tend to like to not watch a lot of stuff in the middle of the day when I could be out doing some errands and getting stuff ahead of time. And then I like to watch at night, provided I'm a night owl anyway. So I try to watch as much stuff at night, and then I feel more creative at night to actually review the shows then as well.
Huh.
That's my way I do it.
All right. That's mm-hmm. a little peek behind the scenes there. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Alan in the 415.
Oh, yeah. Eric got a record.
Long timer, yes. Mm-hmm. He has a series of sort of headlines here. So,
okay.
So four quick hits for you.
Right.
One, spill the beans. What was the special cinematic technique used at the beginning of The Last Kingdom that you liked so much? Do you remember that?
Cinematic technique at the beginning of Last Kingdom. I do remember The Last Kingdom. What was the cinematic technique that I must have? Did I go on and on about this?
Apparently, yeah.
I'm trying to think now. What did I like about that? I don't know.
All right, sorry, Alan.
This actually goes back to the previous gentleman's question about how I watch TV. Clearly, because I watch too much, I forget quickly.
Yeah, then you forget about it. Yeah, no,
a lot
that's
of brain,
that's your brain is protecting itself by doing that.
Yeah, that or it's damaged. I'll figure that one out, and maybe we can answer that one later.
Okay. Number two, exception to the rule. The Simpsons has been on for a quarter of a century. Should it be put to sleep? I still enjoy it, he says.
Oh, absolutely. Exception to the rule. I think I will take as many Simpsons episodes and South Park episodes as I can possibly get. You know, I think the whole it was better at the beginning and then the rest of it sucked in the middle and in the current days is really not true. It's a little more spotty. There were bad years in the middle, obviously. But it was still fun and it's still a great show. No, don't kill that show. No way.
All right. Number three, giving up on old favorites. Like you said, it's time to cull the season pass list. I just eliminated The Daily Show. Too little political commentary these days, and what there is isn't as good as it used to be. There's no question here. Is there something that you have eliminated?
Yes. I'm with you on The Daily Show. I'm not watching that. I'm not watching The Nightly Show much anymore either.
Yep.
I'm going to have to go back, and when I'm going to review that, I just fell out of favor with that. I do record the late night shows, but I end up deleting them a bunch of stuff. I realized that for like the Arrow and Flash are shows that I like that I don't watch them every week. So I'm not deleting them, but I allow them to pile up a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
Shows that I took off the DVR recently for good I'm trying to figure out what was the, was it a Showtime series that I took off? Whoa, geez. Yeah, there's a couple recently where I was like, you know what? I'm done with it. Masters and Johnson, Masters of Sex.
Yeah, that's the one.
I took that off. Clearly, I've lost that in my entire brain.
Yep. Again, it's part of your coping mechanism.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's like being an NFL cornerback. Mm-hmm. Once you're burned, you forget it.
You gotta walk it off.
Oh yeah, I've caught up. I know that I can get a lot of the Sunday animation series, including The Simpsons, kind of anytime I want to.
Right.
So I don't watch those nearly as much. And,
I consider Bob's Burgers to be just something that's always available for me to watch when I'm in the mood.
Yeah. So there's a lot of those that I don't watch anymore. But that's a good question because I just did a big purge. Mm-hmm. Of stuff.
And you purged it out of your brain. That's so
I
healthy.
Did the same thing, right? I did that. Yeah. I'm still watching The Nick, obviously. I really love that show. I find myself having to remember that it's on. So there's a few that like I just have to go back and remember that they're on.
All right. Mm-hmm. And finally, new sci-fi show. Did Fargo really mean to have that brief science fiction moment about 15 minutes in?
Yes. In fact, not only did they mean to have that will be explored.
Okay.
And it's actually, we're three episodes into Fargo. I'm not going to give it, I'm going to say what it is, but it's not a spoiler because it's going to be, There's stuff been written about it. It's going to be in the show. There is what appears to be a UFO. And I wrote that in my review. That, I said, here it gets crazy and it's insane and all this stuff. And I said, that's not even counting Ronald Reagan, who's in this, and UFOs. But yeah, it turns out that Minnesota at that time saw an inordinate number
of UFOs.
Of UFO sightings in the 70s.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so it will be part of it.
All right. We're going to move on to Gary in the 5-10, the old five and dime.
Oh, yeah. Well, hometown.
Gary says, I think Blind Spot jumped the guppy.
Oh, there's one. I stopped recording Blind Spot and Quantico. Took those two off immediately.
Where previously it just winked at the guppy and smiled coquettishly. In a cluster of back-to-back brain farts while the pot exposition called the kettle exposition. And then he goes on. No, you don't know the GPS coordinates of all government vehicles in real time for your assassination convenience. There is no app for that, and especially not written by a 17-year-old. No, the dark web and the deep web are not the same thing. No, software source code is not like a fingerprint that identifies one programmer uniquely. No, most software is not written by one person in isolation. No, there isn't one central hackathon where random developers fly their freak flag. And that was just in the first part of the first 10 minutes. Good grief, Gary in the 510. So...
yeah.
Out on the blind spot. I'm out on blind spot too. I, as I've said, middle of episode two, I was like, nope.
Yeah. And I, just for anybody who cares to see the takedown when it comes, I am doing a story on both Blind Spot and Quantico because they were the big picture pilots. Those are the ones that hooked people. And I think that is going to be, those are going to be shows that cannot sustain themselves because the mystery will become boring after a while.
Stephanie in the 502. Says, a few podcasts ago, you asked your listeners to give the TV show they were still watching that I know I should stop, but I can't. Well, mine is Castle.
Oh.
It's like I can't quit it. I was very much into the show through season four, but the last few seasons have been lackluster as they passed, but I can't quite give it up despite falling asleep a couple of times this season watching live on Monday nights. Any suggestions to help me finally break away?
Cold turkey.
Tough love. Tough love from Tim for Stephanie. My God.
Not only that, Stephanie, if it comes to it, because this is dire, that if you're still watching Castle like that, no one's watching Castle. I don't think the people who make Castle are watching Castle. I won't say that about Bones. I'm not a big fan of Bones, but people who are insane about Bones, they're still watching. But anyway, I'm willing to come to your house and take the remote.
Prescribe a replacement. How about that? Is there something she can get into maybe on streaming or something that's airing now that might be a nice like a methadone to take her off of the highs of Castle?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Castle's still kind of a mystery. I don't know. Maybe you could do Elementary or Person of Interest or Jane the Virgin. Those are all good. You should switch those out.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll come to her house, though, and do it.
In Kentucky.
I'll put the dog down.
All right.
As we say, I'll put that dog down.
All right. Well, yeah. Stephanie, you've heard it. You've heard it here.
Yeah.
Joey from the 321. That's Space Coast, Florida Space Coast.
Wow.
The geekest
air. I love that at 321.
Get it? Because it's like a countdown for a rocket launch.
That's perfect. Is this real? Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
It's a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Okay.
He says, I like Jason. I'm a comic book enthusiast and as such give wide latitude to all the super shows, with Heroes being the exception. Very wise, very wise. So I was ready to give Supergirl a chance, even though the trailer scared me. You recently talked about opt-out moments in a show. I had two during the Supergirl premiere. The first was the IT guy, fashion designer, seamstress, material scientist. Fair point. I still wasn't ready to let go, but when her ungrateful sister, hey, I just saved your life, what's with the attitude, is revealed to be a member of the Department of Extranormal Operations, aka Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., aka Men in Black, I just could go on. I agree, that was a moment where I was like, come on. But again, I got over it. So Joey continues, other problems. I like fast-paced shows, but the events in the premiere seem very compressed and should have been spread over two or three episodes. Again, I think this is pilot syndrome. You got to get it all out there in the pilot. They feel they've got the pressure on them. The whole one whose name shall not be spoken routine on Superman was dumb, especially considering how often he was unmentioned throughout the show. So you have the ability to fly, but you haven't done it in years. Come on, I'd be flying every night. Finally, the whole story centered on a print empire in 2015. What kind of absurd fantasy are they trying to sell us? Joey in the 321.
That may have been my favorite thing that we just said. Yeah, he's right.
That's a little like in The Flash where there's that newspaper from the future in the pilot episode, and you're like, really?
Really?
Newspaper in 2025?
That's not happening. Right. Yeah.
But anyway, I think you got to go with it because it's a pilot, and it goes both ways, right? I feel like pilots have got to be like, you're like divining the future through the pilot. Like, the pilot is not going to be representative of any other episode that show ever makes. So you like look for the things that might make it worth your time. It's hard for me to opt out. Sometimes I'll opt out in a pilot, but some of this stuff, I'm like, they can fix that. They might not, but I'm going to give them a chance. They can fix it.
And I agree with that, but I will say one more time, this whole notion of not getting second chances like that, I get it. I get why people say nope.
But no. And also, I mean, I get why they pack 3 episodes worth of material into the pilot, right? Because like if you take it slow and you only have like by the end of the first episode, the first time we see her fly, is anybody going to come back and watch episode 2? You kind of want to pack that pilot so people are like, wow, that was a lot of stuff. I'll come back next week. Because they're not into the long haul yet. You got to sell it on them. So that's one reason why pilots, it's not just to sell the studios and the networks. It's also to sell that first week, even though it totally doesn't match what any other episode will be like. Right. I mean, you can't go back to a pilot of any show, almost any show that you've watched and liked, and go back to the pilot. If it was shot as a pilot separate from the series and look at it and not think, this is really weird.
Well, I would argue that there are still some, I mean, Mad Men looks very similar.
Right, but did they shoot that as a pilot, or did they just do a 13-episode order of that thing? I don't know. You're right. Yeah. There are exceptions to the rule. There are totally exceptions to the rule, but some of my favorite shows, I look at the pilot and I'm like, wow, this is kind of strange.
Yeah, if they're selling it just as a pilot and that's the only thing they shoot first, yes, that's hard. But I do actually think that AMC wanted to see the first hour.
That's true. I was thinking about like Buffy, which is one of my favorites. They actually shot a like 30-minute test reel episode that's like based on the script of the first hour of the pilot or something, but and you can find it on the internet and it's really weird. But when they went to series, they didn't use the same actors for some of the parts, and so they reshot it. So they don't have a weird, Buffy doesn't have a weird pilot because of that, but a lot of pilots are super weird.
Yeah, it's and also famously All in the Family, if you go back, I think this stuff is actually online now. They have like the actors trying out for it who were never, it was like Nat Carol O'Connor, and it's very funny.
Okay, next up is Art for the 425, which is Seattle.
Yeah.
On a recent episode of The Flophouse, America's favorite bad movie podcast, that is my favorite podcast, co-host Stuart Wellington led an amusing discussion tangent into the cop, not a cop script premise. As a reflection of reality, this is, of course, one of the more ludicrous plot devices available to writers, as it has no basis in reality. It's also an extremely popular one, since in looking around the TV landscape, I have begun to see it everywhere.
Yes.
There are your straightforward Castles, Boneses, Elementaries, and Mentalists. Those are still shows, right? I think Mentalist is gone now.
Mentalist is gone.
There is your amped up Blacklists and Doodle Booties, and then there are the deceptively packaged versions like iZombie and The Limitless. Man, Art, you're killing it. I'm sure if the listeners put their mind to it, there could be a much longer list. Tim and Jason, are there any of the common TV plot tropes that you just can't get past? This one's in my head now, and I can't unsee it. It's the cop, not a cop. He's a cop. She's not a cop. Together they solve crimes? ?
Yeah.
Which is
That's
totally
been going
true.
On for ages. He's totally right. It's getting worse. Oh my God. Sleepy Hollow, same thing.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're all over the place.
She's a cop. He's a guy from the Revolutionary War.
He's Ichabod Crane.
Together they fight supernatural crime.
Yeah, it is hokey. And you always laugh. I think people who don't really watch TV that much, like the class that I teach on television at CCA, when they saw the Blind Spot pilot, they thought it was hysterical that someone would just like let her go. And she's like, I'm coming.
Yeah.
I'm going with you. And they're like, never in a million years would that happen.
Well, in The Limitless, it's like that too, where he's like, hey, so I guess I'm going to be an agent now. And they're like, no, okay, I guess you will be.
Yeah,
no, he's not.
Yeah, somehow he finds you an out so that you can join the force.
All right,
yeah,
you're not a cop. Okay, I'll tell you mine. I just thought of one. A trope that bothers me is I don't like it, and I can't stop thinking about it, when there's a sitcom about people who have jobs, but it's not a workplace sitcom, and they are endlessly spending time together hanging out. And I can't watch those shows. Like Friends was a good example of this back in the day. But I can't watch one of those shows without thinking, why aren't you at your job? I can't. I just can't do it. It's like, why? What are these? How do they have so much free time?
Oh my God.
That's the one that gets me.
Yeah, that's funny. That's kind of a funny one. Like, it's like, it's very, you just want people to work. You want it to be honest about the work, yeah. work pleasure divide. I love that. Mine is my trope, the one that bothers me the most is, it's a dialogue trope where, the entire premise of the plot of that particular episode would fall like a souffle if someone actually just spoke up.
Oh my God.
That to me is maddening.
Oh yeah.
Like someone knows something and all they got to do is say it. But instead something happens. They get all pissy and they're like, I'm not going to tell you.
Lost suffered from that a little bit. And you know, the Flash and Arrow especially, there's a whole lot of like, oh, I can't tell anybody this secret. It's like, no, you know what? You should probably tell it. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's fine. But it's just like, no. It's much more dramatic if I don't tell them. And yeah, I know, but you should tell them. Because it's just, there was a whole last season, there was the father of, it's Detective Lance, the father of Laurel, had like a heart attack or something during the off season. And they had like important information, like his daughter had died in the meantime. And important information to impart. And they're like, no, his heart can't take it. It's like, you know, first off, that's not how hearts work. That's not. And no, we'll just not tell him his daughter died. That's better, right?
Yeah.
No, it is never better to do that. But it's better if not everybody has all the information, because then they can all have a big misunderstanding. And it is infuriating to watch that.
Yeah, there's so many of those ones where
you don't
tell the information. It's almost like in Homeland. You know, maybe a series that I stopped making fun of now because of I got Agent X to do that for me. But, you know, the whole thing where Carrie's sending her kid back. The thing that bothers me is when they gloss over something really quickly, like, they just say really quickly, like, oh, the baby has to go back to the United States because he's going to be safer there. And I'm like, what? I'm like, wait, what? You're in the Middle East. You're in Berlin in the Middle East. You're going to say that the baby would be not as safe on American soil? Hmm. Come on. That's redonkulous. So, and then it becomes the plot point of them getting rid of the baby, et cetera. But I'm like, no, actually, the baby would be, and Carrie, much safer in the United States.
Oh, boy. We're going to move on to Bill. Bill's in the 610.
Welcome, William.
That's Pennsylvania. And Bill says, while discussing Northern Exposure, you were trying to think of other shows that created a similar quirky world. This has actually got a news tie into. I immediately thought of Gilmore Girls, one of my all-time favorite shows. Stars Hollow is right up there with Sicily, Alaska in my book. To anyone who loved that show, I don't need to explain. The Up Channel is running a Gilmore Girls marathon right now. I heard somewhere there's talk of a Gilmore Girls reunion. They are talking about doing it.
That's going to happen. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. With Amy Sherman Palladino coming back and running, because she was not on the show the last year, right? So she gets to sort of like take her characters and put them in a place that she's more happy with. And number three is, do you think maybe the name of the show contributed to its never getting the audience it deserved because it sounded like some kind of girly girl chick show? I don't know. It was also on like the WB, right? So how much of an audience could it have gotten?
Yes. I mean, that's...
I know so many guys who watched the Gilmore Girls. I got to say it. I watched Gilmore Girls for the first four seasons or something.
Oh, I loved it.
I've got multiple friends of mine who are guys who are not even like old married guys, but like they were young single guys when that show was on. They totally watched Gilmore Girls. So and for me, you know, Lauren Graham alone, worth price of admission. So yeah, that was a great show.
I think, first of all, that's a great pull. I think that hitting the spirit of the quirkiness that we're talking about was great. That's a great idea.
It's the town with its own troubadour, right?
Oh, yeah. Stars Hollow. And the troubadour was Grant Phillips.
I know. Grant Lee Buffalo. Yeah.
Yeah. And I the fact that like some of my favorite, what ended up being some of my favorite Grant Lee Phillips songs when he was solo out away from Grant Lee Buffalo were songs he was practicing on set there. And you're like, well, wait, you sang that before that album actually came out? That's so cool. Very quirky. That's a great pull. The thing about the title change and whether men will be – first of all, Nielsen's is flawed. No one should ever trust it. But it is true in some ways because, like, right now, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is a great series. It's pulling like zero men. It's not, they're not even registering.
Right.
And Jane the Virgin also pulls zero men, as far as like Nielsen says. They're not even, there's not enough to actually accurately rate them, which I think is ridiculous. And I think there are plenty of people who actually watch, males who watch those shows. So there's a flaw in the system, but maybe there's something there. Because look, Jane the Virgin, My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, they both have female leads. They're both light and they're emotional, et cetera, et cetera. They're singing in some of them. And you're like, maybe guys just tune out. I don't know.
I got one. I've got a lot more, so I'm going to have to push some of these back to next week. But I think we've got time for one more, and it's going to come from our buddy Matt, the bottle episode from the +44.
Yes,
in jolly old England, in Blighty, as they say. He said, "Hello from across the pond again." Recently, another podcast I listened to. Sorry. I do listen to other podcasts, very British, featuring a Canadian and a Brit talking about Saturday Night TV, and the Canadian co-host was shocked at how much emphasis there is on Saturday Night TV being one of the biggest parts of the weekly British TV schedule, and that whole evenings are planned around watching TV on a Saturday. This was something brought up on TVTM a week ago or so, in which Tim mentioned the Saturday Night BBC model being interesting and not really used. I think BBC America having their shows on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Over in the UK, a lot of stupidly popular light entertainment shows have aired on Saturday night. We have shows that hook the largest viewing figures of the week: Doctor Who, Strictly Come Dancing, X Factor. As a child, many years ago, my family would visit our grandparents on a Saturday, and we would watch a lot of TV. A lot of it was a mass of different variety shows, like what Neil Patrick Harris tried to do with Best Night Ever. That kind of show would go down a storm in the UK. Go down a storm!
Go down a storm!
In fact, we've had comedy actors and stand-up comedians and entertainers in a similar vein to Harris have very successful shows on Saturday nights. The Saturday night schedule is even to fit before the 18 to 30 demographic go out for the evening. And later on in the evening, there's shows which show the day's highlights of soccer, football, he said, but I'm going to translate it, which is time just as people come back from the pubs or watching a game live. As a Brit, I genuinely struggle to see what's strange about the Saturday evening scheduling idea in North America. Why is it a massive ratings gap? Is there no TV broadcast on a Saturday? Is everyone out? Does every American family sit around a piano singing songs? To my recollection, I'm sure all us Limeys think the only thing that ever airs on a Saturday in America is Saturday Night Live. In all seriousness, I'm genuinely intrigued by this apparent massive cultural difference, and hope you guys can shed some light. Forever listening, Matt from the Bottle episode. Now, you remember Saturday night used to be a huge night in America too. The Love Boat,
the biggest night. Yeah.
The Love Boat, Fantasy Island, all the great shows. Yeah, what happened?
Carol Burnett, all that stuff. Well, a couple of things happened. Once they started to get more programming, and then nights became segmented, and people, you know, people are pretty savvy, but even people today don't even know that there is a like unspoken thing about each night of the week. That, like, for example, Friday night is geared towards women and geeks.
Yeah.
And that's because in this country, they see them as not going out. You won't be going out to get a date. There's X amount of women who don't have a significant other, and they're geeks that don't have, that's the Hollywood mentality. So we'll program to you on Friday, you're home. But how it went from Saturday and moved away, it's a little more complicated, but I will say that the moving force was, there was a downturn in ratings. People were going out more often, and as they started to move, they would have bulk shows on Saturday. As they moved them into other days of the week, which became popular, Saturday became less of a player. But basically it was, everybody kind of decided at the same time not to program Saturdays. And so you can actually draw people to a night if everybody's programming. But if nobody's really programming, other than Fox had, you know, for the longest time it ran Cops and America's Funniest Home Videos on that day, and then SNL, but that's really late at night. But everybody just gave it up. Weirdly, Friday is also becoming this graveyard too. And Sunday and Thursday are the big, big nights of television. Everybody's home Sunday because the theory is that you're home, your circadian pacemaker has kicked in.
You're nesting.
You're nesting because you got to go to work the next day. And Thursday is just the day that it's not quite Friday, you're home, and then they put a lot of the big movie ads on Friday.
That was the story that I heard, is that as demographics became more of an issue, it turned out that a lot of young people are out and about on Friday and Saturday nights, and the older audience that is home on Friday and Saturday nights, less profitable, and that a lot of the money started going, because of that and because of other reasons, it started flowing toward your Thursdays when more young people were home, and that was where you could do your big like movie ads and things like that to get people to go out to the movies on Friday or Saturday. And I wonder if, you know, maybe it was just a thousand different things like that, that just kind of, it all just kind of flooded until we ended up with nothing on Saturday night. Because it used to be, I mean, as a kid, you know, yeah, everything was on Saturday night. The Love Boat is a perfect example. It was an 8 o'clock show. It was this it was light entertainment, actually, a lot like Matt says, where it was, you know, celebrity cameos, and it was never anything dramatic. It was like light romantic comedy stuff. And even as a kid, when I didn't understand half of what was on it, I watched The Love Boat and Fantasy Island, because they were on, and those shows, you know, those shows don't exist anymore, and that night doesn't exist anymore. I mean, we still have Saturday nights, but there's just, you know, BBC America is about it.
They're the only ones, and their strategy was, they're like, look, we have a limited budget, we have limited advertising, do we throw it all on Sunday right into the saw of all the
every other show
dramas? They said no, and you know, they basically said, we understand that we are not going to get live same day ratings. They're just, we're not, the odds are against us. And so they were forward thinking, saying that we have shows people want to watch. Most of them won't watch them live. So we're going to put it on Saturday, to tape them on Saturday. We'll get to live plus three ratings. And so that's how they survive.
All right. Thank you, Matt. And so I've got like, people did a great job. I mean, the secret is that I was in Indiana last week. So we pre-taped last week's episode. And so it's 2 weeks of material I've got here. So I've got some that I'll save for next week. And people should also send in new stuff. You can tweet at us at TVTM, email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com, or post on the Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. I will collate those, and next week I'll bring those plus the ones that are left over here, and we'll do it all again. But so my apologies to those people whose letters I didn't get a chance to read. We had so many of them, which is a good problem to have, I think.
That is a good problem to have. We have we have people who have questions. We're ready to take their questions.
Yeah, and we're here to help.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned just one thing to throw in at the end of this, because we want to begin with Agent X and I can end with Agent X.
Okay. Is there another clause in the Constitution that you haven't mentioned previously that we should get out now?
Yeah, there's a clause that in Jessica Jones, which is coming up, the Luke Cage character, is played by Mike Coulter. I guess he's going to have his own show.
Yeah, there's a Luke Cage show in development too. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike Coulter, the actor, is on Agent X.
Huh.
So his role is, you know, he's just minor. He's barely even in it, but he's a cast member. But I'm sure he must have said, hey, I got these other shows that people are actually going to watch.
Yeah.
So I got to do those first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Beginning and end with Agent X.
That's pretty good. Well, Agent X, it's going to be out there next week. Just get ready. We'll mention it again next week, probably. But just emotionally prepare yourself for Agent X. Is what we're saying.
So excited!
All right, Tim. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Always.
All right, and thanks to everybody out there for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate you caring enough to send us your tweets and your emails and tell us what area code you're in. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.